welcome to the Free Stretch here on GoBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. First edition of the show in the month of February, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Thank you for joining us today. Of course, you know, football season is now officially over, so we'll recap a little bit. Not the Super Bowl X's and O's or anything like that, since it was several days ago now, but just kind of some final thoughts to wrap up both the Super Bowl itself and the 2018 season. We'll look ahead. Hey, there's football this weekend. If you're really hard up for it, the Alliance of American Football is starting. I'll be watching, okay? I know a lot of you guys will be too. Bucks have made a couple of moves and some other things. We'll get to all that today on the show, but I want to thank you for joining us. And as always, I love hearing from you guys. I get to a couple of emails later in the show. If you want to get an email sent to me, it's very easy to do. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. That's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And that will get you what you need as far as getting an email. Like I said, if I have a chance, I can always read them on the show. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. They're proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty, which I've been telling you about. This is on new and pre-owned vehicles, including unlimited years, unlimited miles, 10-year roadside assistance, 1-year complimentary service. You get all these things when you buy a car through them. Now, if you want, just go to the website before you even have to leave the comfort of your own home or even the 6 inches in front of your face with your smartphone. Just go to BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com, and you can check out the completely transparent online pricing there. And then if you want to go down there and visit in person, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway there on the east side of the road. Mention me, Bobby Fenton. Mention the Free Stretch. Mention the Joe Bucks Fan discount, and you'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount again on top of the pricing. They got a couple things coming up over there. First of all, they'll give you a 65-inch TV if you buy a car. So there's that, which I mean, that alone, I just bought a 65-inch TV a few months ago. You don't have to do that if you're in the market for a car anyway. You can kill two birds with one stone, which is pretty nice. Second of all, if you're into the whole classic car thing, the Bill Curry Ford Classic Ford Car Show is coming up on February the 22nd. That is basically 2 weeks from Thursday, this past Thursday, February 22nd. It's at 7 p.m., and that'll be, again, at the location there at 5815 North Dale Mabry Highway. And actually, excuse me, it's 2 weeks from Friday, not Thursday. My mistake. 2 weeks from Friday night. It'll be on a Friday night in late February there. You'll have the restored 1970 Boss 429 reveal, a bunch of other ones, Mustangs and all that other stuff will all be lined up. So it should be a lot of fun. Thanks to them. And thanks to, you know what? Thanks to the game of football. Let me get sappy for a second. For providing us with yet another year, okay, of either free if you just watch on TV or pretty low-cost entertainment, in my opinion. There's still, of all the things in my life that I turn to for entertainment, probably nothing I rely on more than the sport of football. And now that it's over for 2018, I'm a little bit sad. And that includes the Super Bowl, by the way, because let me tell you this. And the popular thing all week long was to rip the Super Bowl. It was such a bad game, this and that. And I'm not saying it wasn't. It was kind of a bad game. But you know what it was? At least, at the very least, it was close. There's a difference between bad games and non-competitive games. And that was not interesting football. Okay, I wouldn't want to sit and watch a bunch of games like that over and over again. But when you get to the fourth quarter, whether it's 38-35 or whether it's 3-0, okay? A three-point game in the fourth quarter is a three-point game in the fourth quarter, and at least this game had that. So, you know, looking back over the past 20 years, I don't rank that Super Bowl very highly, but I've heard a lot of people saying, oh my God, that's the worst game I've ever seen. I can't believe that is easily the worst Super Bowl of all time. Hey, you got a short memory, honey baby. Because let me tell you, forget about my childhood. I was born in 1980, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and the games were almost always terrible back then. And I don't know why that was, but the era I grew up in, that was the norm. We've had sensational Super Bowls lately. So that's great, and this one certainly didn't measure up to those. But even in the last 20 years, I could think of 3 or 4 Super Bowls off the top of my head that were worse. Definitely, what was it, 4 years ago? Seahawks 43, Broncos 8. That Super Bowl, had literally nothing to recommend it in the second half. There was just no reason to be watching the football game. So that sucked, okay? A couple years later, or I'm getting a little hazy on it, but all of these were in the past 5 years. Broncos 24, Panthers 10. Slightly more competitive, but still, that game, I don't remember a single thing about that game as far as what happened, other than the fumble that Cam Newton was very hesitant to jump on, which I enjoyed personally. But that's it. That's all I remember from that game. That game sucked. It had nothing interesting. It was not in contention in the fourth quarter. I mean, maybe a little bit into the early fourth quarter, but by the end, you knew how that was going to go. That game ranks behind this one. Going back a little further, the one, it was in Tampa, actually. It was the 2000 season, 2001 January. It was Ravens 34, Giants 7. That game was terrible. And there have been others, but those are just the ones in the last 20 years that were all worse than this Super Bowl. So, hey, one play in the red zone, the entire game, first touchdown came 53 minutes in. These are not good things. But when it got down to the fourth quarter, I was glued to the TV. The fate of the world championship of this sport that we all follow and love was still hanging in the balance. And I thought, at least for those few minutes, it was pretty damn interesting. And the Patriots end up winning 13-3, which just shockingly is their largest margin of victory in any of their Super Bowl wins, despite that game having 16 total points scored. But I will say this much about football people in general. This whole week now, looking back, especially the first couple of days after the game, I saw so many articles written. Oh, here's how Bill Belichick outclassed Sean McVay. This was supposed to be a classic matchup of coaches, the student versus the teacher. But then Belichick just embarrassed McVay and left his theories in the trash bin. And oh man, just what total domination by the genius, the master. And look, Bill Belichick coached a hell of a game. And he did outcoach Sean McVay. I'm not saying he didn't. But it's funny how narratives work. I don't think people who fancy themselves as football people, I'm a football guy, I'm not just going to watch the game. I'm going to tell you why the Patriots were able to win. Here's the scheme. Here's the reason why. Look at this, you know, all this coaching X's. You know, those type of people, and I love those type of people. I rely on those type of people a lot. Doing my show, reading articles they've written, listening to things they have to say. You know, I've coached high school football on the JV level, nothing crazy. But I don't fancy myself one of these people that's going to break down every game and get into the real nitty-gritty X's and O's. And the people that do, I think, don't want to admit to themselves sometimes how random all this stuff is. Because football people like to think of all the variables under a coach's control as like a chess match where one coach does this and another coach does that. And again, Belichick did outcoach Sean McVay, but the game was 3-3 in the fourth quarter, and the Rams were driving. And they, the play of the game, folks, okay? For all the things we could say about, well, there was the Brandon Cooks throw into the end zone, or it was the Jared Goff throw to Brandon Cooks in the end zone, where Cooks was pretty much all the way to the end zone, had time to turn around and square himself back up to the play and just wait for the ball, almost like a center fielder, and Goff threw it a little bit late. It got there, just not quite in time, and McCourty got a hand in there and broke it up. That was one of the plays of the game, but it wasn't the play of the game, in my opinion. There was another couple of other plays, another one to Cooks where he was interfered with, really. It should have been a flag, but his right arm was pinned down, or it might have been his left arm, and what looked like it was about to be a touchdown catch ended up being an incomplete pass. That was a big one too. But you know what the play of the game was? It was 3-3. Rams were driving in the fourth quarter, and Gurley broke off his biggest run of the game, I think it was. He finally got loose. It was like a 15-20-yard carry. Got him into Patriots territory. And all of a sudden, it's 3-3, and it felt like New England was on their heels. Flag down, holding. And it was not a good holding call, okay? And instead of that first and 10 now in Patriots territory, it was first and 20, way back still at like the 35 of the Rams or something like that. The Rams ended up punting on the drive. They would never score again. And just like that, a random call that wasn't even the right call, but just some random call, just halted everything. And if it's not for that, the Rams may well go down and score. They make it 10-3. They go on to win the game. And now the same exact coaching job by the same exact two men. And we're talking about how McVay outsmarted the guy who's supposed to be the mentor to everybody else. We're going to talk about how McVay, you know, found something late, even though they had had difficulty all game. He finally, in his wunderkind fashion, came up with something no one else could have thought of, and they found a way to beat the Patriots and slay the Giant. That would have been the narrative. Again, same guy, same team, same level of play, but this one result, and there's only one result. You know, we can replay things in our head or what could have or should have been. There's only one result, so it's almost like we take that one result and then we base every single thing, you know, in the whole wide world on just the one thing that happened. And you don't have anything else to go on, I understand. But I'm not buying into the whole, oh, you know, Bill Belichick just completely outclassed McVay. I mean, the Patriots didn't whiz a drop either. And they got their touchdown finally after they hit Gronkowski inside the five on that deep ball down the left side. But, you know, like that missed PI call on Brandon Cooks, if they call that, then it's first and goal at the one. Rams score the holding call. You know, Goff's missing Cooks on what would have been a touchdown. These are very random things. I know people don't want to admit this. They always want to say, oh, well, you make your own luck and this and that. And that's not necessarily untrue, but it's very random. Life is very random, not just football. But, you know, you could play that game 5-6 times and the Patriots might win 3 and the Rams might win 3. And it's as simple as that. But in football, we don't have series. We just have one. And even the one they played was just completely and utterly, it felt like, random down the stretch. And the Patriots came out on top, to their credit. And there's a reason they've been the world champion 6 times over now, as their current, at least nucleus, has been with Brady and Belichick. But, you know, obviously the Rams even being in the game was random because of the missed call against the Saints. And I'll tell you what, hey, could you have scripted a worse possible game for Saints players, coaches, and fans? Like, if you were going to watch that Super Bowl, and I'm sure most of them didn't, and if you were going to say, okay, what's the best possible outcome for us? And I don't think there was one, because no matter what happened, you're thinking, well, what if it had been us? It could have been different. But the best possible outcome, I guess, would have been the Patriots just winning like 55-10 or something like that, where you say, oh, well, I don't know if we could have done anything again. You know, maybe you feel a little less regret if that had been the outcome. But for the Patriots and Rams to play that kind of a game, I mean, the Saints just must have been sick to their stomachs watching that. Again, if they watched it at all. Just thinking, my God, what if we had had a crack at these guys? And every game is different. I mean, you can't just say, oh, well, Drew Brees wouldn't have been held to 3 points. I guarantee you that. Yeah, probably not. But the Patriots might not have been held to 13 either. We'll never know what would have happened. But just trying to put myself in the shoes of a New Orleans fan or a player or coach, that's about as badly as it could have gone in terms of your feelings of regret for the rest of your natural life. You know, that's about it. They will never get over it, nor should they have to get over it, but they do. And so it is what it is, and it's over, and that's what we've got. So it was still football. Again, it was competitive in the fourth quarter. I was glad to have it. And now we're going to give way to the offseason and the Buccaneers. You know, things will start heating up with the draft and free agency and the combine and all these things coming up. And we've got plenty of time to get to all those things. There hasn't been a bunch of news on the Bucs, of course, this week. Although they did have a couple of bits of news come out regarding the kicking situation. Okay, Cairo Santos is still there. But one, Matt Bryant's not coming back to the Falcons, so everybody's already all in a tizzy about getting Matt Bryant back and reversing this imagined curse of Buccaneer kicking that has existed ever since Matt Bryant was allowed to leave. Bryant says he's coming back. He's playing. If it's not for the Falcons, he wants to play somewhere else, as he still feels good. If you look at his play from last season, there's no reason to believe he can't kick at least another year. The Bucs also signed another guy, Philip Anderson, spelled with an E on the end, Anderson, S-E-N. Not related to Morten Anderson, but he is Danish. Last kick for the Berlin Rebels of the German Football League, and he'll be brought in to compete a little bit too. His numbers in the German Football League, which, if you're wondering, uses regular football rules, does not have the extended extra point the way the NFL does, has the regular college extra point. But Anderson went 16 for 25, which doesn't sound very good. It's 64%, quick math. He went 42 of 44 on extra points. Again, those are the regular extra points, not the 33-yarders. He was 10 of 12 from inside 40 yards, 6 of 13 from 40 and longer, with a season long of 52 yards. So I don't think he's going to be the Bucs kicker this year based on those numbers. But again, Bucs just bringing in people and things like that. So in case you're wondering, that was the latest move. And we'll see what ends up happening with all that. But if you're too impatient to wait for all the way into later in the spring, when even the off-season stuff starts happening, let alone actual football coming up in August, the Alliance of American Football, all right? And we got our own team here in Tampa for next year when the XFL starts in 2020. And I'll tell you what, it's hard to imagine two of these leagues existing simultaneously, but the AAF's getting the head start of starting this year. XFL's supposed to start next year. So Bob Stoops actually just signed on as the coach of the Dallas team in the XFL, and the Tampa team has not announced a head coach yet or anything like that, but that'll probably be coming up soon. But as for the AAF, Alliance of American Football, Steve Spurrier coaching the Orlando Apollos, that's enough to get my attention. But I'll tell you what, it starts on Saturday. There's eight teams. There's going to be four games every week, no bye weeks, just a 10-week, 10-game season with two games on Saturday and two games on Sunday, basically. So Saturday night at 8 p.m., it gets kicked off. I think it's Orlando and Atlanta. And first of all, I'm not going to like make this like some sort of obsession or a following, but you're damn right, Saturday night, if I'm home, TV's going to be on football, okay? And you know, the Lightning have a game, it'll be on that too. But if there's football to be had on in my house, it will be on, you know, at least one of the TVs. And I'm actually pretty curious. This league is going to be a little bit different. First of all, here's some of the rules differences. Tell me if you're more or less interested based on these rules differences. Okay, the league is not going to have TV timeouts. There'll still be timeouts and breaks in the action, changes of possession, but they won't just have TV timeouts for the sake of TV timeouts. That will result in 60% fewer commercials, which they hope gets the game time from an average that you see in the NFL of about 3 hours to around 2.5 hours. Now, I don't think football games are too long to begin with, because they're so exciting. And even the college games that go 4 hours, I rarely find myself saying, oh my God, this is taking so long. Like, I don't care. It can be as long as it, you know. Baseball, and I love baseball too. I'm not, you know, it's not like I don't like one and like the other. But with baseball, I definitely complain about how long the games are all the time. But with football, I hardly notice. Nevertheless, not going to complain about fewer commercials. And so they're going to charge a little more for the ones they do have. They're going to do some in-game product placement. Hey, fine, whatever. Do what you got to do. Just don't put ads on the uniforms. So we'll see how that goes. There will be no extra points in this league. It'll be all two-point conversions. Fine. No problem with that. There will be no... You know what? Excuse me. I will say one thing about the no extra points, all two-point conversions. I don't have a problem with no extra points, but I said this in the NFL too, instead of doing this 33-yard extra point, just have them declare when they score a touchdown, do you want the extra point? Like, you don't have to kick it, just do you want 7 or do you want 6 and try and go for 2? And if you want 7, you just get 7. Like, you don't have to come out here and kick a 20-yard extra point or a 33-yard extra point. I don't like missed extra points swinging games, personally. And the NFL rule kind of, it's been a little off-putting for me because of that. But yeah, just have them declare, I want the 7, okay, fine. Or, okay, no, we want to keep it at 6 and we're going for 2. Both options. But that's not what they're doing. They're just making everybody go for 2 every touchdown. There will not be kickoffs, so we get a chance to see what football without kickoffs is like. And we've talked on this show before in months past about how the NFL seems to want to go that way. So we'll get a look at it. So what are they going to do? Very simple, kind of backyard rules where if you didn't have kickoffs. I always like to have kickoffs in my backyard games as a kid, but just put the ball in the 25 after every touchdown. That's what they're going to do. What about the onside kick, you might ask? Good question. The original plan for that was to give the team that just scored the ball back again at their own 35-yard line and have it be 4th and 10, basically. So from the same spot you kick off from your own 35, only you run a scrimmage play and it's 4th and 10. And if you get the first down, you keep the ball. If you don't get the first down, the other team gets the ball at that spot, similar to missing an onside kick. Now they realize that 4th and 10 ain't what it used to be with the way passing is in football nowadays and, you know, some cheap pass interference flag or something. So they don't want to make it too easy to be successful on your onside attempt. And so they changed it to now it's going to be 4th and 12 from your own 28-yard line. You got to get to the 40. And if you miss it, you miss it. If you throw an incomplete pass, it's their ball at the 28, the other team's ball. You know, fine. They do need to make it. I would even say 4th and 15 is probably, I'm not sure what the numbers say, but whatever the percentage of successful onside kicks is, I would think 4th and 15 or even more might match that, because even 4th and 12, you see teams get that quite a bit at a rate that I would guess is higher than most onside kicks. But that's a rule. And then overtime is going to be a Kansas tiebreaker, which is like college football's overtime, only at the 10-yard line instead of the 25. It's the high school football rule. In fact, we lost a playoff game in a Kansas tiebreaker when I was a junior at Jesuit High School to Lake Wales back in the 1996 season. But that's it. They're just doing one round, so if they're tied after one round, the game's just a tie. And then finally, this is my favorite rule because it is directly what I spoke about 2 weeks ago on the show after the NFC Championship game and the terrible missed pass interference, and you know, you all remember that, on and on and on. They're going to have what's called a sky judge. The sky judge, I'll read the official description, then I'll give you the layman's description. The sky judge officiating will have a ninth member of the crew called a sky judge, an off-the-field official who reviews every play using technology like a booth review. The sky judge can call or take away penalties missed or made by the on-field officials. Basically, what I said 2 weeks ago is what football's missing, and this whole thing with challenges and all that, you know, the gimmicky red flag. Whenever we watch games, you and me sitting at home in front of our 65-inch TVs, like the ones you can get from Bill Curry Ford, or even your whatever size TV, when you're sitting at home on your couch, just watching the general telecast, I'm not even talking about in some war room with eight TVs, just you watching Fox or CBS or NBC or ESPN, and something happens, how long is it until you are 100% sure pretty much what actually happened as far as, oh yeah, this guy was in bounds, or this guy was out of bounds, that was a catch, that wasn't a catch. Really about 10 to 20 seconds it takes you watching at home as a fan, just with the regular TV replays they show, and you can easily see almost all the time, with a few exceptions, and be confident, oh yeah, that again, that ball hit the ground, that ball didn't, his foot was here, his foot was there. It's not very hard. So they call this the sky judge and call him a ninth member of the crew. It's the guy sitting on his couch watching the game on TV member of the crew, which is what I said 2 weeks ago. Football is missing. We don't need referees scurrying over to grab a little 8-square-inch tablet with the sun glaring behind them and they're hunched over and there's 75,000 people watching their every move and this guy's trying to figure out what the hell just happened. I can figure it out sitting in my house. We all can. It's not that hard. So there. This is the part I want to see the first time this guy comes in where the sky judge buzzes down and goes, oh, yeah, yeah, that ball there, that was an incomplete pass. Like, we don't need to have a challenge and then stop the game and then, oh, the, you know, so-and-so is just elected to challenge the play. Then the guy runs over. I like replay. We need replay. I don't want calls to be wrong. I want them right. But we can do it so quickly. So I'm interested to see how this sky judge thing works, because if this works, this is something I could see the NFL getting involved in. And the NFL and the AAF are, you know, affiliated in at least one way, because they're going to have, like, each of the eight teams has four NFL teams it's assigned to, where guys that don't make it on those teams or guys that are trying to make it on those teams, you're assigned. Like, the Bucs team is Orlando and the Dolphins and a couple other ones. I don't have the list in front of me. So, you know, the NFL is on board with what the AAF is doing. Like, they're working together. And so I could see the possibility that these other things that are being experimented on in the AAF, if they work, could be used in the NFL. And I love the sky judge. I mean, the sky judge thing needs to happen, and I hope it does. But either way, my point being here, Saturday night, 8 o'clock, I'm excited to see. Like, I'm curious and genuinely excited to watch more football. I don't need a break. I'm not footballed out for a few weeks, and I need some time. I'm ready to get back in there right now, and so I will. And I guess they're going to do point spreads on these games, which will sweeten the deal even more for someone like me. I can't see a downside here. You know, couple games on Saturday, couple games on Sunday, just eight teams, easy league to follow, and we'll see what happens. So In the meantime, I've got one more little piece of the show to do. I want to do the reader interaction or listener interaction portion of the show here. And again, you can always be a part of this by emailing me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can always find me at bobbygameday. If you want to tweet at me and do it that way, whatever it is. But I had Adam in South Tampa actually approach me. This is not even an email. This was in person a few days ago. And says, Bobby, I was hoping you'd address something on your show. So I'm always all ears. You know, I want to hear people's suggestions. And of course, Bucks just hired Bruce Arians. Bucks just announced season ticket prices are not going up. And in some cases, they'll be a little less expensive. They're trying to get, you know, people excited about this. And people are excited about this. He said, Bobby, you know, just what, he's in one of the crews, this guy Adam. And I won't give his full name. But he said, how come I go to Gasparilla? You know, he's in... dressed up like a pirate in one of the crews doing the whole thing with the parade. He says, I go over there, I see hundreds of people, if not thousands, dressed up like pirates. And I'm not just talking about crew members, I'm talking about people in the crowd too. He says, how come I go to a Bucks game, no one's dressed up like a pirate? So Adam wants to know why fans don't dress up like pirates more and what can be done about that. Now, I got to admit, I never actually considered the lack of people dressed up like a pirate as... you know, at Bucks games to be a thing. It's probably because I've never considered dressing up like a pirate to go to a Bucks game. It's not because I'm against anybody doing it. And I actually should have asked Adam. I don't think I did. Asked him, has he ever worn his crew from Gasparilla, has he ever worn that gear to a Bucks game? Because they can really, you know, they're not just guys who just throw on a plumed hat or something. These guys have the makeup and the whole thing. You know, if you've been to Gasparilla, you know what I'm talking about. So I said, you know what? It's a fair question. And I don't know how you guys feel about this or if it's... I mean, the Bucks have been missing people in general to be there in the stands over the past several seasons for obvious reasons. But, you know, whether it's people in pirate gear or what, what I told them, and here's the only thing I could think of, you have to incentivize it. And so maybe you could do a thing. I know season pass members get, like, what is it, 15% off concessions when they have the season tickets, you know, the little card. So maybe you extend that to people who dress up like a pirate, too. Or maybe you give them 20% off. Hey, come to the concession stand. If you're wearing anything that resembles pirate gear, then you get a discount. You know, is this the most pressing issue in Buckland right now? Of course not. But I like Adam's line of thinking because Adam is trying to think of ways to get people more. And this guy's a diehard Bucks fan, goes back to the old country just like I do. Traveled by himself to go to the Super Bowl when he was like barely out of college back in 2002. And this guy is hardcore. So he's someone who I at least give some credence to when he comes to me with something like this. So I said I would mention it on the show. Let me know if you would ever consider dressing up like a pirate or not. I remember one guy from when I had season tickets. And this is when I went to, I think it was 115 games in a row at Raymond James Stadium. Basically every home game from 1996. Middle of 1996 all the way through like 2008. I went to every single game at home, playoffs, regular season. I missed one preseason game, which I don't count preseason games anyway. But I mean every, and this is when I was in college in Gainesville. Come home, didn't matter, never missed one. And during that time, I would always, and I still do when I go to Bucks games, I would always go to the rail in one of the end zones. You know, they have the railings where you can just stand and lean on the railing and have the end zone view. Because I'm not a guy, I don't like to sit in a seat for a football game. I prefer to just stand up and watch. And one thing I do like about Raymond James Stadium, even though I've been a little critical of its architecture and its bland, you know, structure, it's facility-wise, it's fine. Just, I thought we could have done so much more with it architecturally. But what it does have is common area. It has a place where if you don't want to sit in your seat, you can go somewhere else and watch the game. And for people like me who always bought the cheapest tickets, I always had upper deck. I never even went up there. Like I went like 7-8 years in a row without ever even seeing the upper deck. And that's where my season tickets were because I'd always go to the railing. So you get to know some people down there because a lot of it's the same people. And I always enjoyed the camaraderie of all that. There was this one guy. And he wasn't one of, you know, there's some of those super fans who get a little bit crazy, and there's always the guy, you know, with painted faces and things like that, and or the guy with the Chucky doll shoulder pads back when we had Groot, and there was that guy. People who, like, you smile at them, you're like, yeah, right on, man, but you would never actually be like that person. Like, you would never actually want to be like them. You're kind of like, hey, that's cool, bro. All right, man, you know, go Bucks. But you're like, that's the extent of it. Like, you're not going to hang out with this guy. There's always those types. But then there was this one guy who was, like, late 20s, early 30s. Not a bad-looking guy, like, decent-looking guy. On the surface, just appeared pretty normal, and he came to every single game alone, which is a little bit weird, but I've been to Bucks games alone, you know, here and there, but I've never gone, like, a whole season going alone, and he always dressed like a pirate. He was just wearing a pirate outfit. He would go stand on that rail alone, and he would cheer his ass off, and, I mean, I love the Bucks. I can't fathom doing anything like that. Not the pirate. The pirate gear is a communal thing. Like, if I was going with some buddies and we all did it, that'd be one thing. But going to a game alone dressed like a pirate and yelling and screaming and doing all the things fans do and it's just you, I gotta say, I thought that was a little odd. And that guy was there almost every game that I was for almost a decade. I don't know if he's still there now. I used to go to the railing by the pirate ship and I switched to the railing by the, the south end zone when the speaker system got fixed, because the old speaker system at Raymond James, if you remember, was just one big giant speaker in the south end zone above the scoreboard that just blared and served the whole stadium. So anywhere on the south side of the stadium, it was just deafening. I hated it. Now they've spread the speakers around, so it's like kind of an integrated sound system, so you don't get that, you know, the imbalance, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. So now the south end zone is where I go because that's closer to where I always park on the south side, and ingress and egress and all that is easier. Point of this all is, you know, if you go down to the rail, you're going to see all kinds of characters. And Adam in South Tampa wanted to know about people wearing pirate stuff to the game. So, listen, the Bucks start winning. I mean, I haven't seen anybody dressed up in any themed anything for quite a while now. If the Bucks start winning, there'll be one more people in general. It'll be, you know, 60, 65,000. It'll be hard to get tickets, all the stuff we remember if you've been around here from back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then two, out of that will grow all these different, you know, people always want to draw attention to themselves. And just by going to the Bucks games lately, you could draw attention to yourself. But now, if it gets to be crowded and it gets to be the in thing again, people will dress up like pirates. They'll dress up like, you know, oh, it'll be the Kangol hats are coming next because, you know, people love jumping on whatever the trademark thing is with the head coach. So it was the Chucky heads with Gruden, and I don't know what it was with any of the other coaches since then. There wasn't much to discern any of them. But with Arians, people will be doing Kangols, and then they'll try to outdo each other on how creative they can get with the Kangols and all that. But yeah, dress like a pirate, absolutely. And give people a discount at the concessions if they do. Why not? I mean, if someone's going to go through all that trouble, it's the least you could do to give them, you know, $2 off of a pretzel that already costs $6 or something like that. So thank you, Adam in South Tampa, for your suggestion. And with that, thanks to the Joes as well for helping me get in front of you guys and getting this show on the air every week. Thanks to all of you for listening and for emailing and things like that. Our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford. Again, go down and see them at the Classic Car Show coming up on Friday night, February the 22nd. That'll be over there at the place itself, Bill Curry Ford, on Northdale Mabry Highway. 5815 is the address. It's about a mile and a half, maybe a mile north of Raymond James Stadium there. Just north of Hillsborough Avenue on Dale Mabry. Thanks to them. And with all that, as we go into next week's show, we will get into the nitty-gritty of the offseason and personnel, draft, free agency, combines, all that fun stuff. I'm thinking about doing a Joe Bucks fan combine. I haven't talked to anybody about this, but me and Justin, but I think if you made one player out of me and Justin between his bench press and maybe my 40-yard dash and vertical, and maybe the Joes or even Ira Kaufman have a lot. I need to float this idea with the Joes and see if we can do this, because I'd personally love to see it. I bet you guys would too. We need to do all this stuff. But that's all coming up here as the offseason gets rolling. It's been a great 2018 season. It's over now, but our fun is just beginning. It's a new day with head coach Bruce Arians, and we'll talk all about that in the coming weeks and months. So until then, all y'all be safe this weekend. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the opening weekend of the AAF and wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.